4 billion years ago, Earth was a barren wasteland. Lava flows, toxic skies, a planet screaming with chaos. And then something arrived. Something not from here. A tiny hitchhiker, clinging to the icy surface of a comet or buried in the rock of a meteorite. Microscopic, unassuming, but carrying the spark of life. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't random. These microbes, alien in every sense, landed on Earth and began to thrive, feeding off its mineral-rich chaos, evolving into the vast web of life we see today. Here's the shocking truth. Life as we know it didn't originate here. It was seeded from the stars. And if that's true, then everything changes. Earth isn't our home. It's just the first stop on a much larger journey. Because we're not Earthlings. We're the aliens. And we were never supposed to stay. To understand how life on Earth could have extraterrestrial origins, we need to step into a story. Not just any story, an imaginative tale rooted in the theories and findings that we will explore later in this video. A memory from beyond time, whispered by an ancient being who might have been there from the beginning. A being whose kind watched Earth when it was still a violent, untamed world. A planet screaming with fire, drowning in poison, and completely void of life as you know it. This being isn't human, and its story isn't recorded in any history books. But stories like these, grounded in creative interpretation, can help us visualize the stunning possibilities behind the science and theories we're about to uncover. So listen closely, because even this imaginative journey could reshape how we think about the origin of life on Earth.
You don't know who I am or where I come from. I doubt you'd even believe me if I told you who or what I am. But let's just say I've been around long enough to remember a time before Earth was anything close to what you call home. My kind, the Anunnaki, existed when your planet was a molten, chaotic orb, screaming its chaos into the void. And yes, we were watching. We chose your world for a reason. We had a plan.
The voice, low and resonant, comes from somewhere beyond time, from a being who remembers the birth of stars and the death of worlds. This being, the narrator, guides us through a tale that feels both ancient and unnervingly relevant. As the voice continues, it speaks not with arrogance, but with the weight of a species that once played God.
Our world was old, magnificent, but fragile. The elders knew it wouldn't last forever. So we turned our gaze outward, searching for a place to sow the seeds of life. Not just to save ourselves, but to create something greater, something more enduring. That's where your Earth came in.
The narrator pauses, as if remembering. The molten oceans, the choking atmosphere, the raw fury of a young planet. Then the story unfolds. The spacecraft, the capsules of microbial life, the delicate balance between hope and hubris.
I remember the last time I gazed at your planet. It was unrecognizable then, a molten sphere cloaked in fire and fury. An angry child of the cosmos, screaming its chaos into the void. Shallow oceans boiled under a sky thick with poison. Volcanoes raged endlessly, spewing molten rock and choking the air with ash. It was beautiful in its way. Dangerous, but promising. My kind, we called ourselves the Anunnaki, were not beings of sentiment. We didn't choose Earth out of love or compassion. It was practical, strategic. We needed a cradle for something greater than ourselves, a place where the seeds of life could take root and evolve into something extraordinary, a proving ground, a petri dish. call it what you will. The directive came from our elders, the ones who whispered of a dying star and dwindling time. Our world, magnificent and ancient, was reaching its twilight. Survival would require ingenuity, but more importantly, it would require successors. Life that could grow beyond what we were, what we could ever be. Earth, with its swirling chaos, was chosen. It had all the right ingredients, the fire, the water, the minerals. All it lacked was the spark. We gathered what we called the Zarok, capsules of microscopic life harvested from the outer edges of our galaxy. Prokaryotes, extremophiles, simple yet resilient organisms, building blocks of life. We engineered them to endure the impossible, to thrive in hellscapes. And then we added something else. Call it a gift, or a curse, or a code. It was the essence of us, our DNA, fragmented and hidden within these primitive forms, a time-locked message for the universe to decode. When the capsules were ready, we brought them to the chamber. I still remember the hum of the launch, the gleam of light as the containment pods were loaded into our vessel. There was no ceremony, no celebration, just the cold, efficient purpose of a species playing God. We arrived above Earth, cloaked in the shadows of its orbit. Below us, the chaos churned, a planet still young, hostile, and waiting. The Zarok were released, one by one, falling like embers into the cauldron below. They entered the oceans, the molten cracks in the surface, the volcanic plumes spewing gases into the atmosphere. Everywhere they touched, they adapted. They thrived. That was the plan. Survival first, evolution second, and then, one day, something more. Our hope, the elders' hope, was that these microbes would carry our legacy into the cosmos, not as clones, not as replicas, but as something new, something better. But we underestimated the chaos. Earth was wild, uncontrollable. The Zarok mutated faster than we predicted. They learned to thrive not just in spite of the hostility, but because of it. We watched as they began to divide and diversify, as they claimed the planet for their own. The oceans teemed with life. The skies began to shift, to clear. The air itself transformed. And then we saw the first spark of complexity, organisms that were no longer simple, that were learning, adapting, creating. They were becoming something else, something we couldn't entirely predict, something we couldn't control. I left Earth long ago. My kind chose not to intervene, to let our experiment unfold without our interference. But sometimes, I wonder, did we create life, or did we unleash something we don't fully understand? Did we shape Earth, or did Earth shape what we left behind? You call this directed panspermia, the idea that life on your planet didn't start here but was sent, delivered by beings like us. You think it's a theory, but I was there. I watched the first spark take hold, and I wonder if we created gods or monsters or something far stranger than either. We didn't stay to watch the outcome. We didn't stay to see you. But we always knew you'd come looking for us.
To fully appreciate the potential of directed panspermia, the idea that life on Earth has extraterrestrial origins, we need to take a step back. Before we dive deeper into this captivating possibility, we owe it to ourselves and to the pursuit of truth to explore the other explanation science offers for how life might have begun. Now, I'm not talking about wild guesses scribbled on the back of a cocktail napkin. These are legit, big deal theories built on decades of people in lab coats, running experiments, arguing, and occasionally yelling, "Eureka!" But here's the thing, science is like a jigsaw puzzle you picked up at a yard sale. Some pieces are missing, others don't quite fit, and you're left squinting at the picture on the box trying to figure out what you're looking at. The theories we're about to unpack, they've got some solid points, sure, but they also leave us with a lot of head scratchers. So grab a drink, settle in, and let's walk through these ideas. We'll see what they explain, what they don't, and why they're not quite the slam dunks some think they were. Alright, so let's talk about one of the most popular theories for how life got started on Earth, abiogenesis. Big word, I know, but it just means life popped up all on its own. No alien interference, no cosmic seeding program, just Earth doing its thing. According to this idea, life didn't need any outside help. Nope. It was all about chemistry. Picture this. Billions of years ago, Earth was a hot mess. Shallow, mineral-packed oceans. Think of them as nature's primordial soup. We're stewing away. Now toss in some basic ingredients. Methane, a gas that smells like bad eggs. Ammonia, the stuff in window cleaner. Hydrogen and water. These molecules collided, mixed, and eventually teamed up to make amino acids and nucleotides, which are basically like the Lego bricks of life. But the kicker? Energy was everywhere. Lightning strikes lit up the sky. Volcanoes were erupting like party poppers. Ultraviolet UV rays from the sun were sizzling everything. In hydrothermal vents, basically underwater geysers, were adding heat and chemicals to the mix. It was chaos, but the kind of chaos that's perfect for cooking up something extraordinary. In 1953, two scientists, Miller and Urey, thought, hey, what if we could recreate that primordial soup in the lab? So, they set up a contraption that mimicked early Earth. A glass chamber filled with gases and zapped it with electricity to simulate lightning. Boom! Amino acids formed. It was like nature's cookbook handed over its first recipe. The building blocks of life. Pretty cool, right? But here's the real head-scratcher. How did those tiny molecules take the next step and organize themselves into something as complex as a living cell? The theory points to RNA, ribonucleic acid, basically DNA's chill cousin. Unlike DNA, RNA can store information and catalyze, speed up, chemical reactions, which makes it the MVP for early life. So maybe RNA got the ball rolling by replicating itself and passing along some early genetic codes. Then comes the next leap, cellular structures. The theory says lipid molecules, or fats, might have naturally formed these tiny bubbles, or vesicles, in the soup. These bubbles acted like little containers, protecting the fragile RNA and other molecules from the harsh environment. So, congrats, Earth! You've got protocells, the world's first attempt at life.
So let me get this straight. Life started in a bowl of soup. What was it? Chicken noodle or volcanic surprise? Come on, break this down for the folks at home.
Okay, Wendell, here's the simplified version. Imagine Earth as a cosmic kitchen. Lightning and volcanoes are the chefs, stirring up the steamy chemical stew until, voila, amino acids and molecules just show up. Then these molecules are like, hey, let's form a club. And eventually they get their act together and become the first living things.
Okay, but let's pump the brakes for a second. You're telling me a bunch of random chemicals, zapped by lightning, somehow turned into life? That's like saying if I throw some wires, a battery and duct tape into a washing machine, I'll end up with a fully functioning iPhone. Where's the proof that this cosmic blender didn't just create a mess instead of life? And don't even get me started on how these tiny molecules magically decided to self-replicate. Sounds more like a wild guess than a theory backed by hard evidence.
Those are all fair points. I mean, the theory has its moments. It's not completely bananas. The Miller-Urey experiment showed that organic molecules can form under the right conditions. But yeah, let's not ignore the elephant in the room. Jumping from a couple of amino acids to something that can self-replicate, metabolize, and evolve? Well, that's one massive leap. Maybe it happened, just like the textbooks say. Or maybe there's a missing ingredient here. Something we haven't figured out yet. Abiogenesis gives us the classic story of life starting on the surface. But some scientists think the real action was happening way below, like miles below, at these things called hydrothermal vents on the ocean floor. If you've never heard of hydrothermal vent, imagine a giant underwater volcano spewing super hot water loaded with all kinds of minerals and gases like hydrogen sulfide, smells like rotten eggs, but hey, microbes love it, and methane, yep, the same stuff that makes cow burps infamous for climate change. It's basically a bubbling chemical cocktail happening in an environment so extreme it makes you wonder how anything could survive there. Here's the theory. These vents, which scientists sometimes call black smokers because they look like chimneys puffing out dark plumes, could have been the perfect hangout for life to kick off. All that hot, mineral-rich water could have acted like a natural chemistry set, with the minerals around the vents playing the role of matchmaker for molecules. The result? Biochemical reactions that might have been the first steps toward life. And believe it or not, we've got modern-day proof that life loves these crazy spots. There are microorganisms called extremophiles, basically tiny life forms with the attitude of a rock star. These guys thrive in boiling heat, crushing pressure, and toxic environments that would kill most living things. So it makes you think, well, if they can do it, why not the first life forms?
Oh, so now life started at the bottom of the ocean. Let me guess, we're talking about underwater volcanoes spewing hot soup this time. What's next? Life in a toaster oven. Explain this one, genius.
All right, I will explain it. Imagine this. Deep in the ocean, these hydrothermal vents, basically nature's underwater geysers, are blasting out superheated mineral-rich water. It's like a buffet of chemicals and energy, which might have been just the thing tiny microbes needed to thrive. These little guys could have fed on all the good stuff coming out of the vents and gotten their start in life's toughest boot camp.
So let me get this straight. Life decided to pop into existence in the most inhospitable, high-pressure, scalding hot part of the ocean. Right. Because when I think ideal conditions for delicate little microbes, I totally think lava jacuzzi. Sure, why not?
Look, Wendell, I get it. It sounds nuts, but then you realize how many extremophiles, those crazy tough microbes, live near these vents today. And it kind of makes sense. These little guys are basically like, oh, you thought this was hard? This is where we thrive. So yeah, it's extreme, but maybe life isn't as fragile as we think. Still, I can't blame you for finding it a little hard to swallow. Maybe we're missing a piece of the puzzle. Heck, maybe the puzzle's even bigger than we realize. There are some other ideas in the mix too, kind of like the runners-up in a science fair. They're variations of the main theories we've already covered, each trying to explain how life might have gotten its start. For example, the deep-sea alkaline hydrothermal vent theory is like the black smoker hypothesis' chill sibling. Instead of chaotic, acidic conditions, it imagines a more relaxed, pH-balanced environment where early life could have emerged. Think of it as the spa version of the underwater volcano idea. Then there's the RNA world hypothesis, which puts RNA in the spotlight as the molecule that started it all. RNA, by the way, is like DNA's scrappy older sibling. It's a molecule that can store genetic info and do chemical work, which makes it a prime suspect for the whole first life situation. Basically, RNA could have been the original multitasker before DNA and protein showed up and specialized. Next, we've got the iron-sulfur world hypothesis. This one argues that life might have started on shiny metallic minerals like pyrite, aka fool's gold. The idea is that chemical reactions on these surfaces could have jump-started life, with iron and sulfur compounds playing the role of matchmakers. And finally, there's the clay hypothesis. Yep, clay, good old mud. This theory says that mineral surfaces in clay might have acted like a mold, helping organic molecules line up and connect in ways that eventually led to life. It's basically like Plato's school of thought. Nature used whatever was lying around to shape the building blocks of life.
Oh, great. Here comes the lightning round of leftover theories. Let me guess, these are the runner-ups. The almost plausible but still ridiculous ideas, right? Enlighten me.
Okay, Wendell, I'll humor you. Here's the rundown. The deep-sea alkaline vent theory is like the original vent idea, but with a little less drama. Kind of like swapping hot sauce for ranch dressing. The RNA world hypothesis is all about RNA showing up first and being the overachiever molecule, handling storage and chemical reactions all at once. The iron-sulfur world hypothesis has us imagining life starting on shiny rocks, because why not? And then there's the clay hypothesis, which says life might have started in mud puddles, using clay as a kind of molecular Lego set. It's like nature was saying, let's just try everything and see what works.
Wait. Let me get this straight. Life possibly started on a clay playground on shiny rocks, or because some RNA molecule decided it was ambitious, and this is the best science can do. Sounds like nature was throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what stuck, literally.
Honestly, that's not far off. Science is basically a giant game of what if. Sometimes it's brilliant, and other times it's just throwing theories at the universe and hoping one lands. But yeah, when you step back and look at these ideas all at once, it does feel like nature was working through every option in its cosmic cookbook. And instead of giving us clear answers, it left us with even more questions. Classic science move. These mainstream theories are pretty incredible, no question about it. They're the result of generations of scientists rolling up their sleeves and trying to crack one of humanity's oldest mysteries, where we came from. Each theory gives us some juicy clues, but they also leave us with some big gaping question marks. For every riddle they solve, it feels like two more pop up, like some cosmic game of whack-a-mole. And here's the kicker. None of these theories really nail how life made the leap from a bunch of random chemicals to actual living, breathing, reproducing cells. They're great at listing the ingredients, but when it comes to explaining the recipe, how you mix, bake, and end up with the miracle of life, we're left scratching our heads. It's like someone handed us a box of cake mix, but forgot to include the instructions or the oven. This is where things start to get a little more interesting and maybe a bit weird. Because if the idea of panspermia has even a hint of truth to it, then the missing recipe might not be from Earth at all. What if life's secret sauce didn't originate here, but came from somewhere way out in the cosmos? Suddenly, we're not just talking about life as a local phenomenon. We're talking about a recipe that spans galaxies. Let's take a moment to size up the mainstream theories about how life got its start. We've got abiogenesis, hydrothermal vents, the RNA world hypothesis. They're like pieces of a puzzle. The problem? It feels like half the pieces are missing, and someone lost the picture on the box. Even after centuries of research, these theories leave us with way more questions than answers. Take abiogenesis, for example. It's the idea that life somehow arose spontaneously from a chemical soup. You've got this primordial mix of water, methane, ammonia, hydrogen, all the ingredients you find in nature's janky kitchen. But even with cool experiments like the Miller-Urey one, where scientists zapped a pretend early Earth soup with electricity and got amino acids, the building blocks of life, we're still stuck on the big question. How do you go from simple molecules to a fully functional self-replicating system? It's like looking at a pile of Legos and expecting them to assemble themselves into the Millennium Falcon just because you wave the lightning bolt over them. Where's the definitive proof?
Oh, sure. The old lightning zaps a puddle and then, boom, life happens theory. Because obviously molecules are just itching to team up and become a fully functioning cell, right? Let me see if I've got this straight. Random chance somehow pulls off the greatest magic trick of all time, creating RNA, proteins, membranes, and metabolism, all at once, without any blueprint or director. And this miraculous event happens once in billions of years, under perfect conditions, and never again. That's not science. That's like hitting the molecular Powerball jackpot with a ticket you didn't even buy. And here's the kicker. We've been trying to recreate this for decades in controlled labs with all our fancy tech, and we still can't do it. Yeah, forgive me if I'm not sold.
Then there's the hydrothermal vent hypothesis. This one argues that life started not on the surface, but deep down in the ocean at hydrothermal vents. Basically, underwater volcanoes that spew super hot, mineral-rich water. These vents have all the right raw materials and some modern extremophiles, microbes that love living in places that would kill most things, thrive in similar spots today. But here's the problem. No one's been able to recreate the whole process in lab. It's like having all the ingredients for a cake, but realizing you've got no oven and your kitchen's underwater. And let's not forget the RNA world hypothesis. RNA is a superstar molecule. It can store genetic info like DNA and even catalyze chemical reactions like proteins. But here's the catch. RNA is fragile, like really fragile. In a chaotic prebiotic world where meteors were crashing and volcanoes were erupting, how did something so delicate stick around long enough to kickstart life? It's like trying to keep a house of cards standing in a hurricane. Mainstream theories, while fascinating, still hit us with some major head-scratchers. Where did the first self-replicating molecules come from? Did they just materialize out of nowhere, or is there a missing piece of the story we haven't found yet? What about the Cambrian explosion, when life on Earth suddenly got super weird and diverse, like nature hit the evolution on steroids button? Why does it look more like a cosmic switch got flipped than a gradual process? And why, for the love of science, haven't we been able to recreate the genesis of life in the lab yet? We've got all this technology and knowledge, but no one's cracked the code. Don't get me wrong, these theories are groundbreaking and have taught us a lot about life's building blocks, but they feel incomplete, like trying to assemble IKEA furniture with no instructions, and maybe a few missing screws. And those unanswered questions, they're not just gaps, they're massive gaping holes you could drive a spaceship through. Let's talk about the Cambrian explosion. It's one of those moments in Earth's history that makes you stop and go, wait, what? About 540 million years ago, life on Earth went through a glow-up that was nothing short of insane. Before this, it was all pretty simple. Single-celled organisms, clusters of microbes, and a few multicellular critters just floating around, taking their sweet time evolving. And then, bam! Out of nowhere, the planet suddenly gets a VIP pass to evolution's greatest hits. In what's basically the blink of a geological eye, complex organisms crash the party. We're talking eyes, limbs, nervous systems, shells, the whole package. It's like nature was running on dial-up for billions of years and suddenly upgraded to high-speed fiber. Evolution's slow crawl turned into a full-on sprint. It's not just impressive, it's downright suspicious. Take trilobites, for example. These guys had segmented bodies and compound eyes that look like something out of an alien invasion flick. And then there's hallucigenia, a creature so bizarre it looks like it wandered out of a Tim Burton fever dream with spikes on its back and tentacle legs. These weren't gradual steps forward, it's like they showed up fully assembled. Fossils reveal this explosion of diversity, but they don't explain how or why it happened so fast.
Oh, sure, let's just casually call it an explosion. Like that makes it less suspicious. Think about it. Billions of years of single-celled snooze fest, and suddenly, the planet's hosting a biological rave with trilobites rocking compound eyes and hallucigenia strutting around like some sci-fi movie. And mainstream science wants us to believe this was just a natural progression. Please, evolution is supposed to be a slow grind, not a fast-forward montage. What? Did nature get impatient and hit the skip intro button? And while we're at it, where are the failed prototypes, huh? If evolution's experimenting, why do we only find these fully formed blueprints? Seems more like someone installed the premium downloadable content of life rather than letting the base game play out.
Now, mainstream science has thrown out a few theories, but none of them feel like a slam dunk. One idea is that rising oxygen levels created the perfect environment for life to thrive. Oxygen's definitely important. Try living without it. But it doesn't explain how genetic blueprints for eyes, exoskeletons, or entirely new body plans just poofed into existence. Another theory blames it on mutations or DNA duplications, basically nature's way of shaking things up. But why would those changes suddenly happen so fast and on such a massive scale? Evolution is supposed to take its time, but the Cambrian explosion makes it look like it was in a hurry to meet a deadline. Then there's the predator-prey arms race theory. This one argues that as predators showed up, prey species had to step up their game, evolving shells, defenses, and new survival tactics. But again, this doesn't explain the sudden arrival of entirely new body plans that no one had seen before. It's like nature went from sticks and stones to 3D printed titanium in a heartbeat. The Cambrian explosion isn't just a head scratcher for paleontologists. It's a full-on migraine. It's a big, glaring, wait, what? In the story of life on Earth. It's supposed to follow a slow and steady evolutionary path, but this event flipped that script. Mainstream science recognizes the explosion happened, but no one's nailed down a theory that actually fits. But what if there's another explanation? One that ties all these loose ends together. The rapid diversification, the improbability of life forming spontaneously, and all the missing ingredients that other theories can't account for. Enter panspermia. Yeah, it's bold, it's controversial even, and it just might be the answer to questions that have stumped scientists for centuries. What if life didn't start here on Earth? What if it came from somewhere else? Imagine microbes hitching rides on meteorites, surviving the harshness of space, and crash landing here like tiny alien pioneers. Or take it a step further. What if an advanced extraterrestrial civilization deliberately seeded life here, playing cosmic gardener? And here's the real twist. What if the Cambrian explosion isn't just a quirky evolutionary mystery? What if it's evidence, actual fingerprints of an intervention? What if life didn't just adapt to Earth's conditions, but was designed to thrive here? The next step? Diving headfirst into panspermia, to see how this wild idea could completely reshape everything we think we know about where we come from. Because let's face it, the most extraordinary mysteries deserve the most extraordinary explanations. So, what do we make of all this? We've dived into the theories, we've poked holes in the big ideas that science has handed us, and uncovered mysteries that make the origin of life feel less like a solved puzzle and more like a Rubik's Cube missing half its stickers. From primordial soup to deep sea vents, these theories are fascinating, no doubt, but none of them wrap everything up in a neat little bow. Too many gaps, too many question marks. And you know what? That's okay. Because the magic of science and discovery isn't about knowing everything right off the bat. It's about the thrill of the chase. Take the Cambrian explosion, for example. It doesn't just mess with our tidy little narratives about evolution. It's practically yelling, dig deeper, there's more to this. How did life go from a slow crawl to a full-blown rock concert of evolution practically overnight, geologically speaking? Maybe there's more happening here than we've dared to admit.
The questions you ask now are the same ones we asked ourselves long before your world cooled and calmed. The search for origins is never simple, but it's necessary. You're on the right path, even if it feels uncertain. Keep looking, keep asking. What you seek isn't beyond your reach. It's already waiting for you to uncover it.
Those unanswered questions, they're not failures of science. They are what keeps us curious, keep us reaching for the stars, digging through ancient fossils and squinting at tiny microbes under microscopes. And maybe the gaps in these theories aren't meant to be filled with what we already know. Maybe they need something bigger, more mind-blowing, more cosmic. That's where things get really interesting. What if life didn't start here at all? What if it hitched a ride across space on comets or meteorites? Or brace yourself. What if it was sent here on purpose by civilizations way ahead of us? Yeah, like sci-fi, but with science. The theory of panspermia is bold, it's wild, and it might just be the missing piece we've been looking for. So take a moment, let it all sink in, and get ready for what's coming next. In part two, we're diving headfirst into the idea that life on Earth might not be as homegrown as we think. We're just scratching the surface of the biggest wait what mystery out there, the origin of life itself. And trust me, you're not going to want to miss what's next. Grab a drink, settle in, and let's keep exploring. Thanks for sticking around and taking this wild ride with me today. I'm Ralph, that's Wendell, yeah, the sarcastic one, and you've just wrapped up another fascinating adventure on Divergent Files. If you laughed, learned, or just didn't hate it, do me a favor, hit like and subscribe and tap all the buttons that make the algorithm gods happy. I know you're sick of hearing this, but it really does make a difference for small channels like mine. Here's the thing, you're not just the audience. You're the secret sauce that makes this channel what it is. Your curiosity and your wild theories fuel everything we do. So do you have a topic you'd like for us to tackle next? Drop them below in the comments because I actually read them all, and who knows? Your idea might just inspire the next video. Also, please consider going the extra mile and joining the Divergent Files crew over on Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you'll get some pretty cool exclusive perks, and let's be honest, you'll also be helping us keep this channel going. Finally, here's what I want you to remember. This channel isn't just about making content. It's about digging into stories they'd rather keep buried and asking the questions no one else wants to touch. You are the core of this journey. Your curiosity keeps this engine running, and I can't wait to explore the next topic with you. Until next time, stay curious, stay kind, and remember, you are truly appreciated.